This is the second part of a public forum on marijuana and the adolescent brain 2015. Berkeley educator Ralph Cantor made presentations to the Mendocino County community and Laytonville High School this May for the third year in a row. The purpose of this program is to educate the public on the effect that cannabis and other substances have on the developing adolescent brain and personality. As educators, we value accurate information and hope that you will listen to this presentation with an open mind. This presentation is available online at our website, www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs and streaming audio. This program is free to rebroadcast upon notification. Please visit our website and tell a friend.
And I want to say two things as parents for you. Number one, if you have alcohol, and I consider alcohol to be a very dangerous drug, putting this stuff to sleep out here, for young people, for guys, you take away these inhibitions for guys, they got a lot of testosterone. It's just there. That's part of what it is, a very out-thrusting drug. And you have a girl, and you put this part of the brain to sleep, and they become a little bit more receptive and a little bit more open, and it really can be a setup for date rape here. So part of my concern around this alcohol goes way beyond all this other stuff and goes into safety. You can't die from crossfading, okay, because this is an all-arounder, and I really make that clear. You can die from a down. You can't even die really from an upper unless your heart bursts or whatever. But here's the deal.
My question was, can THC allow you to become more drunk or to the point where you're not able to throw up and you might...
That's the issue, more than anything else. Isn't so? Yeah, I guess it makes you more drunk. It's actually a different kind of high. But here's the... And I haven't seen real research on it, but I just know that this is true, is that part of what marijuana does medicinally is it helps people not throw up, especially if they have chemotherapy or something like that. It really inhibits that throwing up. Well, okay, so now I smoke a bunch of weed to inhibit my throwing up stuff, and then I drink a ton of alcohol. It's quite possible now that I'm not going to throw up here. It interferes with that. So can I overdose with alcohol or get into a toxic place with alcohol more easily? I think so. I haven't seen research on it, but I think that mix can cause it that way. My concern at this point, though, is mixing it with a downer, because it's just all around the place, and somehow or other, kids haven't been educated around any of this. I think it's really necessary for us as adults to get into the conversation that the kids are having around weed and around honey oil and around all this other stuff. Because there's a lot here that they don't know about, that all of us don't know about. And the only way we're going to learn about it is to begin to see, hey, what's going on here? And to get off of our prejudices for and against, because it's not, it's way beyond that. But also, I'm waiting for more and more research to come out that says, during this crucial time between 12 and 17 or 18, this is a time when this stuff plays havoc. Question.
Yes, I had a quick question. If you could explain, because my understanding is during this time frame, it's also so critical because if we as adults overindulge, we'll turn off. We'll conk out, pass out, go to sleep, and go heal. Can you explain a little bit about how this developing brain doesn't have that kill switch, that shut off switch? It allows them to keep going and ingesting more. I've heard about this a couple times, but I don't understand the brain science behind it. Does that make sense?
Yes, but I don't necessarily make a distinction there between kids or adults. I think it's pretty much same, which is that for some people, it's firing off way more dopamine. In other words, you bring this in, and for some people, it fires off some dopamine, And the person says, I like that. That's good. That's kind of fun. Maybe I'll do it again. This is what I call a normie on this stuff. This is a person that doesn't really run into a problem with it. You know, there's no, and I want to say something, there's no willpower. And it has nothing to do with it. It just has to do with plain old brain chemistry and how your brain reacts to that particular drug. For some people, it reacts in an enormous way to it. It's almost like an allergy that other people don't have. Like some people have hay fever and some people don't have it. Most people don't. Well, the people that have hay fever somehow or other react to this thing differently. Well, people that really get involved with drugs or alcohol, for them, their brain reacts differently to this stuff. So it fires off a bunch. Now, I want to say something about here, and then I'll get back to your question with this. Two things happen. Number one is the brain is not used to having a whole bunch of dopamine. So what it does is it makes a whole bunch more dopamine receptor sites. So somebody who smokes weed and it fires off a lot of dopamine for them, the brain says, I don't have all that dopamine receptor sites, I'm going to have to make more. So the first thing that happens is you begin to create what I call a party brain. That says, okay, we're ready now, where's that dopamine? Okay. The second thing that happens is if you pound the brain with dopamine. It's kind of like turning up rock music because you love that music and it's real loud in your ears start to go deaf. Here, it's called neuroadaptation. You begin to dull out the receptor side. So you literally begin to dull out the pleasure center of your brain. So you don't feel the pleasure as much. And in one way, with the drug, this is what leads to what they call tolerance. So now, all of a sudden, I'm going to need more of this drug to fire it off so I can feel it, because I don't feel it much anymore. So, and that goes for even after the drug wears off. An apple doesn't taste as good. You've dulled out that pleasure center of the brain. So for people where it fires off a ton of dopamine, they have a brain after that hits and the brain goes, oh God, I love that. That was so great. I had an epiphany. My God, what happened there? The next thing that will follow after that will be, when are we going to do it again? When are we going to, and a lot of that when are we going to do it again stuff has to do with how good was it in the first place. And one of the reasons why crack cocaine or smoking crystal methamphetamine can cause addiction like that is because with that drug, it fires off 3 to 4 to 5 times the amount of dopamine that a sexual orgasm does. So it's off the top here. So having that experience, the brain goes, oh my God, when are we going to do it again? I'm ready. So there's two factors on it. One is, how much does the brain react to the drug? And number two, some of these drugs just fire off an enormous amount of dopamine. And remember, the addiction part is when this part of the brain says no. That's where, because I don't want people to start talking about addicted to running or addicted to this because it fires off dopamine. Yeah, the dopamine is there, and I think the dopamine is there for a very good reason. If without the drugs, what the dopamine is doing is it's telling you what you like. It's telling you, chocolate fires off way more dopamine for me than vanilla. I'm a chocolate man here, you know. Cool. That's what I want to be able to figure out in the important areas of life. And to bring the drug in to play with that at this point, it's just not fair. It's not fair to the kids. It's not fair to a growing brain. This part of the brain, this deep part of the brain here, that's the part I want these kids in touch with that. I want you to know what interests you and what fires off. This ought to be your compass here. And, that's where this weed thing just takes kids off, you know. There's a, if you've ever seen The Wizard of Oz, it's about This girl, Dorothy, that gets blown away from her home in Kansas. She ends up in La La Land, in Munchkin Land. She says to the Munchkins, I want to go home. I want to go back to Kansas. And they say, well, we don't know how you get back to Kansas, but if anybody does, it's the wizard. The wizard is over in the Emerald City. You follow this yellow brick road. It'll take you to the wizard. Maybe the wizard can help you get home. She gets on the road. She runs into a scarecrow. It doesn't have a brain. I want to have a brain. I want to be able to think great things, do great things. I don't know how you get a brain, but come along with me. Maybe the wizard can get your brain. So they're going along. Then they run into a tin man that doesn't have a heart. I want to have a come along with me. And they run into a lion that doesn't have courage. So here's this metaphor, this movie, about people that are on a road to get a brain, to get a heart, to get courage, to get home. It's basically a metaphor to get a life, okay? They get up to the top of the hill, they look down finally, and there's the Emerald City. But if you remember in the movie, between them and the Emerald City is poppy fields, right? The whole thing with the monkeys, forget the monkey thing, but with the, what happens with the poppy fields is they go off into the poppy fields, they get a big smile on their face, and they go to sleep. Okay? And finally, Glenda, the good witch, comes along and says, listen, you want to get a brain, you want to get a heart, you want to get courage, you want to get home? Get the hell out of the poppy fields, get on the road, and go to Oz. And I almost feel like as parents at this point, we got to kind of be like Glenda and not let these kids get lost in these poppies. These kids are walking through fields of poppies all day long. And in some ways, they need more direction from the adults to be able to say, not now. And I think the only way the adults are going to do that is if they really believe this is a concern for teenagers. And the way I got here is just doing this over and over and reading this stuff now. And let me tell you, everything is pointing to it is a big concern for teenagers. And I wish with this whole movement and this whole legalization thing, we begin to sort it out a little bit and be able to say, this good, this not so good, this a concern. And we begin to create policies and stuff that integrate this in, because it's not going away. And I know you guys have been trying to figure it out all this time. I think one positive thing, I'll shut up about it, but it's time for you guys to get out of the gray zone and be thought of as being outlaws here. It's totally ridiculous. A lot of the kids here feel like they're outlaws or criminals in some way. It sets up a frame of mind that I think is very unhealthy for everybody here. It's a hell of a lot better than alcohol. I think at some point, 30 years down the road, look at all the damage and stuff that alcohol has done in this society and cigarettes have done in this society, and we're going to look back and say, look how long it took us around this marijuana thing here on this. So it's not, you know, I think the marijuana has a lot to offer. At the same time, not with teens. And how do we separate that out? And I think in Sonoma County, they've managed to do that a lot better. You can have a person that grows grapes, has a whole winery, and says to their 15-year-old, I don't want you to drink alcohol. You're too young. And there's no hypocritical thing in it. There's no anything. It makes perfect sense. Well, why can't somebody up here that's growing marijuana be able to say, not for you right now. It's not appropriate. You got a growing brain. Wait a few years. Just like with the alcohol. And instead of this, it's just being kind of all over the place at this point. It's time that it really takes its place in the community there, and where are our concerns with it? And I know you have a whole lot of concerns around it in terms of the environment and what's going on in that way. And I have a concern around in the environment, the mental environment for teenagers. And are there positive things? Yeah. But how do we begin to sort this stuff out and get off of all the hype and everything? And I think one of the things that's going to really mess this stuff up is money. Money really can override a lot of stuff. So I think it's up to the community and the parents and the service providers and the teachers to be able to sort this stuff out, to come out and give teenagers a real message that makes some sense to them. Because they're looking at honey stuff and all this other stuff, and they know that this is big stuff. They know they're going in over their heads. And they need some adult connection in there and talk about this and to work it through. And not all bad and not all good, but to really look at it. Yeah.
So you touched on it as you kept talking, but The whole legalization thing, as far as I can see, and in this county as well, it's bottom line, it's money. So this is very interesting what you're teaching us. So how do we incorporate this into the message? How do we get this into the policies and into the laws? How do we affect that? Because right now everybody's just got dollar signs in their eyeballs. So for people in this community, what would you advise us? How can we, grassroot this? How can we make a difference?
I think for one, for parents to really be able to say with some clarity and some belief, I don't want you to use now. It's not okay. Let me tell you why it's not okay. Your brain's happening now. I want you to come in touch with your dopamine and with your pleasure center. It's not okay. Now, it doesn't mean that the kid is not going to smoke. It doesn't mean that the kid isn't going to use marijuana. But you want to know something? It'll slow him down. It does. Right now, because I know I've ran groups for years with kids, and I've had kids say, oh, Mary, oh, she can smoke all the weed she wants. Her parents don't care. So in some way, the teenage community, I think, is asking you, help here. Come.
I totally get that. I've always believed that. The kids need those boundaries to feel safe.
They want, especially, and there's no bound. The thing is around this weed, there's no boundaries around it anymore. I mean, in terms of the potency and the ingestion. It's really on a verge of just opening up in a big way. I think it's really important to, but go ahead.
So how laws being made right now?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's positioning themselves around 2016.
Yeah.
And legalization.
Yes.
So how do we get our input into that process right now? What are some ideas that you might have?
There's two different things. One is we're talking about the community. And there, I think it's discussions within your community and really how kids fit into this thing. And that's my whole thing. But there is a whole movement now in California around this legalization stuff saying, okay, it is going to be legal. How do we do this in a way that makes some sense? Some of it, I think money has to go back into education. It took a long time to do it with tobacco. But that was what paid my salary before I retired for the last 13 years from the county office, was that tax on cigarettes. Look at what happened. Cigarettes really changed, right? We really, in our lifetime, saw a norm change in cigarettes. So that kind of gives us an example. So what happened there? Some of it was around laws. You can't smoke here, you can't smoke there, you can't smoke there. A lot of it was around education. So that people understand more about what's going on here. A lot more is what gets modeled in the adult community that then gets put out there. What caused the drop in smoking with teenagers was first it was the drop in smoking with the adults, and then it filtered down to the kids there. So I think in some ways, I think we need some consciousness raising around this marijuana thing. I was here, it wasn't in this hall, but it was somewhere else in, I think it was Willits, and we were talking about weed, and there's a big group, 250, 300 people there, and I said, does nobody have a problem with marijuana? I mean, if you go to the Bay Area, you can go to an MA meeting 7 nights a week. Not Narcotics Anonymous, not Alcoholics Anonymous, Marijuana Anonymous. And I mean in each county, Marin County, San Francisco, East Bay, 7 days a week you can go to MA meetings. I don't even know if there is an MA meeting up here.
We had somebody asking about it the other day.
Yeah, well, it's time. Yeah. I want a support group from some other people where I'm not shooting heroin in my neck or I'm not an alcoholic, but I hear people that say to me, oh, well, marijuana isn't even addictive. I need my group. I need a group that understand that marijuana can be a problem in our lives, okay? And so I think at some point somebody needs to start an MA thing here. And I'll tell you some of the problems with weed. It's not the same as alcohol. I don't think it takes you down in that way, but I'll give you one that I think is really interesting. I had a woman come up to me and say, you know something? My husband smokes weed every day. and it's killing our marriage here. I feel like he's not home. So I tell him this. And I say, listen, you're stoned right now. I don't feel like you're connected with me. The husband says, what are you talking about? I'm listening to every word you're saying. I will give you back what you're saying here. What is your problem? And the wife is saying, I don't know. Somehow or other, I don't feel connected here. Well, it turns out, psychologically, that you have brainwave patterns, right? Because the brain is firing off. Well, and so let's say it's firing off like that on and off, and you have another person that also has brainwave patterns that are firing on and off. Well, what usually happens when people begin to connect, and you look at those brainwave patterns, they start to kind of line up a little bit. I mean, you kind of feel it like, oh, I feel connected to this person or whatever. In the brain patterns, they begin to get similar with one another when people begin to connect. Well, people smoke weed, they stay in whatever pattern they're in. So what that woman was experiencing is that my husband is off on this pattern here, and there's no way that we're hooking up. Even though the guy says, I'm listening to what you're saying, there's a way that we're not communicating here. We're working on a different level here. So I think in a lot of ways, the influence of marijuana is much more subtle than some of these other drugs. But on the other hand, does it affect connections? Does it affect our relationships? Does it affect communication? Yeah. My biggest issue, though, is how it affects the development of a teenager. But can this be an issue in relationships? Yeah. And should there be, I think not only should there be an MA meeting, what also exists in the Bay Area is, I can't think of what they call it, Maranon. And it's for people who are connected with people who are smoking weed all the time, and how do I deal with it on that end, okay? But somehow or other, at this point, there's not enough room for all that stuff here around this marijuana stuff. But it'll get more normalized, and then we'll begin to see how to deal with this. I just want to see it done on the front end. The other thing that I want to say to you about what you can do at this point, I know one person who has been an incredible teacher for me, who works for the state, who is setting up some legislation on this stuff. And one of them is not to commercialize the selling of marijuana. God forbid it went into the tobacco company's hands. What would happen? I mean, kids knew Joe Camel better than they knew Mickey Mouse. So God knows what they would do if they'd be selling the weed. So some of it is how it's going to be sold, but a lot of it is really setting up a lot of this legislation. He's a person who lives in Marin County, and his name is Dr. Tim Cermak, C-E-R-M-A-K. He's written a number of books. He also wrote a book called Marijuana, What's a Parent to Believe? But he's one of the people that's trying to write legislation to make this marijuana thing come in some way, to put money aside for education, to put money aside for this stuff, so that we begin to set it up in a way that really works for the state. Because what he's afraid of, and what you're afraid of, and what I'm afraid of, is this money thing can really just steamroll over everything else here at this point, and we really need to step back and say, whoa, we're not against it, but there's some issues here too. To bring this drug in at this point, and to bring it in at this 40 to 50% THC is just a different ball game. I mean, I don't know how they're doing it in Colorado right now, but you can have a vending machine that's all of these edibles, and you put money in and you take out an edible chocolate marijuana thing, or you know, it's so and the creams, and there's so much there that I think has to be kind of sorted out. But is there a lot of positive stuff in it? Absolutely. I think it has a tremendous amount to offer. But I think we really need to take our time in walking into this and not drop it on society the way tobacco was dropped on society here and what kind of thing it finally did till we finally had to do something about it. Not the way alcohol is dropped on the society or with these people, you know. But this time around, let's figure this stuff out and let's do it. And we got a chance to look at Colorado and Washington also to see what was working and what wasn't. By the way, one of the things that wasn't working was edibles. They were making the edibles too strong. People were tripping out all over the place, and then finally somebody jumped out of a window thinking they could fly, and then all of a sudden they had to come back and say, whoa, we've got to measure how much is going out there and stuff. There's a lot here, but we got to grow up to another level here on this stuff, and I think that people here also need to kind of feel like we're getting out of the shadows. We're not outlaws anymore here. This is not a terrible thing that we've been doing, but how do we deal with it now in a way that makes sense? And my biggest thing is around teenagers. And I don't think it's hypocritical for an adult to be able to use and to be able to say to the child, no. Same as it is for alcohol. It's just different for teenagers. At this point, and let me tell you, I get a little bit from the cops on this, but no, I'm at 17 to 18. And I'll show you why. See, I think I might have it here. So here, the issue is alcohol, and the one on the left here, the problem this time is dependency, okay? But all these are the same, and pretty much what it's saying is, as you go on in age, the prognosis of getting harmfully involved goes down. So somebody who starts drinking at 13, 47% will end up being dependent in a lifetime. You take it up to the next, it's less, less, less. And this is true for all of these graphs. And what you see is on every one of these graphs between 17 and 18, that seems to be the biggest drop every time. So that's why I'm going back and saying because there's so much pressure on this stuff. Drugs are so integrated in society today. You know, at UC Berkeley, you know what the drug of choice is at UC Berkeley? Adderall, because it helps them to study more and do whatever. But, you know, drugs can be seen as an enhancement in life or a problem in life. And I think one of the crucial places is right here. It may be asking too much. I would love for them not to use till they're 24, because that is when it does solidify in. But as far as I'm concerned, if we can get them that far without really getting into it, I think we made some real progress. Yeah?
We're just curious where the information on the chart came from.
Doesn't it say on here? I don't know.
No, but I love it and I want to use it.
Use it. I'm sorry that, you know what? Just go to any graph that has to do with age and problems with the drugs, and you'll see that almost every one of them will do the same thing. And somehow or other, this is a crucial point. And then the next crucial point is at 24. That's why the people who found that out were the people that rent cars. Somehow or other, it wasn't working with the younger people. Something was wrong. And the thing that's wrong is they're just not all the way up in their prefrontal cortex. And it's nobody's fault. It's not, you know. You say to a kid, what were you thinking? Kid says, I wasn't thinking. They're not there at that place.
When you're talking about the positive side of all this discussion, are you referring to the cannabis, the law, or whatever the...
CBDs?
CBDs, right.
You know, it's interesting because that seems to be the hot topic up here. Right now, I was driving up and listening to ZYX, and there was a conference here just a couple of days ago around the high CBD stuff and whatever. I think CBDs have an enormous amount to offer to the health industry and medicinal value. My sense is that it's a really untapped source, so that I have a lot of positive things to say about CBDs and this stuff. And, you know, truth be told, I'm not down on THC. I'm not down on necessarily getting high. I think that there's a lot of interesting things that marijuana can open up in the brain to open up all of these sites and to get a sense of what dopamine can really feel like. I'm not knocking the experience, and it can show you things that are going on in that you're capable of. What scares me, it can be like a pointer. Oh, this is what it feels like to feel this way. This is what it feels like when life is really interesting. It can be a very interesting pointer. The problem is that, especially for young people, they can fall in love with the pointer. And they end up sitting and sucking the pointer all day long and never go after those things that the marijuana did open up. You follow what I'm saying here? So that's I'm not against it here. But at the same time, it's just a trick. It's just something that happens. I want to share one more with you, which I think is really important. Check this one out. One of the cannabinoid sites in the brain is this place called the hippocampus. And it's down around here somewhere. Remember, this is the thinking part of the brain. So this is in an unconscious part of the brain. And what this hippocampus, what this guy does unconsciously or subconsciously is it's totally connected to memory. And so I'm going to draw memory over here. Here's what it does, and it does three things. Number one, it's like an open Google search engine. And it unconsciously, subconsciously is pulling up from all your memory banks exactly what you're working on or whatever you're interested in at any one moment in time, whatever you're doing, the hippocampus is going into your memory and bringing up all your experience about that. Let me give you three examples. Number one, marijuana makes your hair turn green. Here's the deal. Everybody here, whether you smoke marijuana or not, has got marijuana knowledge. You all know a lot about weed. And your hippocampus is pulling that up right now as we speak. You're not thinking about it until I say to you, marijuana makes your hair turn green. Then you go, what? I never heard anybody's hair turn green. I never seen anybody's hair turn green. That isn't the knowledge that my hippocampus is pulling up right now. Let me give you a second example. You take a bite of an apple. You totally expect the apple to taste like an apple. I know you don't think about it, but if you bit into the apple and it tasted like a banana, it would rock your world. You'd stop what you were doing, look at the apple, and go, what the hell is going on here? Something's wrong. Why? Because the hippocampus, before you ever took a bite out of the apple, goes, hey, check it out, we're about to have an apple. Red apple, green apple, yellow apple, green apple. Pippin, Granny Smith, I mean, you got apple knowledge that gets pulled up before you ever take a bite out of the apple. That's why you expect it to taste like an apple. School, and this is my business here. Say somebody's in the fourth grade. Teacher says to the fourth grade students, you're now ready to learn about percents. I'm going to start teaching you about percents. So I'm going to start teaching you about 50%, okay? Here's what I expect this hippocampus to do in this fourth grader's brain. Number one, it goes, oh, I know about parts of a number. I got fraction knowledge. Not only that, but I learned about decimals this year. I got decimal knowledge. As a matter of fact, I got a whole bunch of math knowledge. And the hippocampus brings it up for me right now, okay? Now, the teacher starts teaching this new thing about 50%. So that comes down, and that starts to rattle around in my brain. And if I get it, and that student says, I got it. Now I understand what 50% means. The hippocampus does the second thing, which is it puts the new information into memory. So a way that we learn is we pull up from what we know, and if something is important, it puts the new stuff in. And the other thing that it does unconsciously is it trashes information. So it's constantly going, not important, not, but that's important. You get it? That's the hippocampus. This gets whacked by weed. Doesn't kill brain cells, but it makes it not work well. And so when it doesn't work well, one of the first things that happens is you don't pull up off a long-term memory very well. Watch the positive experience of this. You get high, you smoke some weed, it knocks out this hippocampus, and now while you're high, you pick up an apple and you take a bite out of the apple. Only your hippocampus isn't pulling up all the old apple stuff. So you bite into the apple and you go, oh my goodness, I may have had 1,000 apples in my life, but you gotta taste this apple, because this apple tastes special. it's almost like I'm eating an apple for the first time. So you get a little glow in there, you know what I mean? It's when you were 1 year old, you might have gotten down on your hands and knees and looked at ants, done with ants. Smoke weed, you might go, whoa, check out the ants walking around. Wow, look at the ants. It's a very interesting experience for a short period of time to cut this memory stuff out. So I'll have kids that'll say to me, Mr. Cantor, we smoke weed, it makes us more creative. We can think outside the box when we smoke weed. And I say to them, you're right. You can think outside the box. You're not locked into your memory system. All sorts of thoughts can float around in your brain. And then they say to me, and then we get into these deep conversations when we're stoned. And in the middle of the deep conversation, somebody goes, what was I talking about? I know I was talking about something deep. I just forgot what it was. It also doesn't put stuff into memory very well either. And during the 3 hours that you're high, it's also hard to tell what's important and what isn't. So you might be tripping on my shirt or my New York accent or something, right? That's part of the interest of a marijuana high. The question is, after the 3 hours are over, how's the hippocampus? Now you're not high anymore. High's over. How's the hippocampus? Because this little puppy is really used in learning and in school. After the high is over, how's the hippocampus? And here's the deal. Unlike almost all the other drugs, THC is fat soluble. It stays in fat. That's why you can make an edible out of it. You just put it in a pan, you put some butter in there, you turn up the heat real high, the THC will go into the butter because the butter is fat. In your body, it goes into the fatty tissue in your body. And the fatty tissue in your body is not your butt or your thigh. It's brain cells. That the brain uses fat for energy, and it burns it up with oxygen. And so the weed, the THC, lays there. It doesn't leave, it just stays there. And so does it interfere with the hippocampus and learning? Yes! I want to say it real clearly. Marijuana interferes with learning. Part of the way we learn is through this hippocampus. What marijuana is supposed to do is knock this out so the music sounds great and the food tastes good and whatever. Yeah. But after it's over, this guy is not back together. It's still full of weed. It takes about 3 days for this to clear out. When she was talking about the urine analysis test, that's what the kids from juvenile hall know is if I smoke a blunt, it's going to be 3 days before I come up with a clean UA. Well, it's not just coming out of your system, it's sitting here. So part of the concern is that it interferes with learning. And I want to say something else. If you have a kid that's smoking weed more than every three and a half days, then before that weed went out of their system, they smoke more, put more in. And before that, we went out of their system, they smoked again. If they're smoking every day or every other day for a few months, they won't come up with a clean urine analysis test for 30, 60, 75 days. So part of the issue is that's why you don't feel a hangover, you don't go through much withdrawal, it's still there. And does it interfere with learning? Absolutely. And knocking the balance out of the brain, this part here, this cerebellum, that does help somebody who has ADD. All of a sudden, they can chill for a while. Once the drug wears off, boom, you go the other way. There's the opposite reaction. Same with the dopamine. After the dopamine is gone, you feel down. Here, life seemed very interesting. Once it wears off, it makes things duller. So there's the back end on that. Question. Yeah.
Would it be okay to assume that the hippocampus, by being, you know, knocked out by THC so often, that it's possible that the hippocampus sort of, you know, you get this use it or lose it thing where the hippocampus doesn't work as effectively as it did before?
Yeah.
If it's not getting used as often.
Right. Yes, I agree. I agree. Now, but picture it for a young kid on this stuff. That's right. So, and somebody had asked me, developmentally, do we actually see any changes in the brain? The only real change we do see physically in the brain is around this hippocampus. It's just not worked as much. And it's a very interesting piece here because it is what makes life interesting. And so for a kid, listen to this, I'll have kids that will totally, man, this is my medicine. This not only helps me with my anger and what goes on inside, it helps me to learn better. Learn better on marijuana? Watch from the kid's point of view. The kid's a little bit ADD, doesn't like school very much. Smoke some weed, all of a sudden it hits the nucleus accumbens and fires off dopamine. So all of a sudden I'm sitting in class, but school's not so bad with some dopamine running around in my brain. So now I don't dislike school anymore. I'm a pretty happy guy here. It hits the cerebellum here and my little ADD stuff, hell, I can just chill now. I can hang in this class. Now it hits the hippocampus, knocks this memory stuff out, and Mr. Cantor, you start teaching about twos and threes. And man, twos and threes are deep. I never really thought about them like that before. No less you start teaching about fours. Man, I'm interested in what you're teaching. So from the kid's point of view, I'm feeling good, I'm slowed down, I'm interested in the twos, threes, and fours. I learn better, okay? The truth is that they don't learn better. It's not integrating at all, okay? But is it a good trick for the kid? Yeah. Yeah. And it's necessary for us to adults or to begin to break this stuff down to understand, why does that apple taste good? Is there a downside on it? Yeah, there is. It plays with memory. And let me tell you, in some ways that might be a good thing. Can you imagine somebody has PTSD? It's coming back from this to work with that. I mean, it's got a lot of potential in a lot of different ways. I'm not saying, you know, any of this stuff is bad or good. It's not killing brain cells or anything like that. It's just that for teenagers during this developmental time of both learning and learning how to deal with all the emotional stuff, this weed is a big deal, especially at this kind of potency. And then to be able to push them over to a point of having a psychotic break or something like that with it, and then you got the whole environmental thing, you know, and this butane thing almost has changed it into what a meth lab was years back, because it can, you know, it can just blow up. But people are looking for stronger and stronger potency on this stuff, and all it is addiction. And I don't think we have to make it much, in some ways, it's not any different than alcohol or anything else. You have a lot of people that drink alcohol, and it is not a problem. And it's fine, and it enhances their lives. And for some people, it is a problem. And that's true for weed also. And it's especially true for alcohol and weed when it comes to teenagers. They just don't process it the same way.
I think as the whole CBD
medicinal
aspect of it, it gets more and more attention.
And it deserves
it. I think that maybe the discussion should be more of what does THC in particular, you know, you say marijuana, and marijuana encompasses everything that's in the plant, the CBDs and the THC.
Right.
And so really what we're actually talking about is THC.
That's right.
And the developing brain. Not
I
so
agree.
Much the CBD, you know.
That and really when we're talking about, and the reason why it's THC in the developing brain is because it plays with that reward center of the brain. And that reward center of the brain is incredibly crucial in terms of motivation, in terms of the directions that people take. I don't know if I mentioned this, but if you take the nucleus accumbens, the thing that makes dopamine, out of a rat's brain, and you put a rat in a and then you put the rat in a cage, and you give it water and you give it food, it starves to death. It doesn't drink the water and it doesn't eat the food because there's no reward. Why should I bother to drink the water? I don't get any dopamine from it. There's no reward from it, so I don't do it. So this dopamine thing, I know that they call it a motivational syndrome and all this other stuff around weed. I don't really see it that way. I really see it just around that dopamine thing. But it's a very powerful driving force for who we are. And I think it's a very good force. It's the force that really tells us down here who we are. I want kids to tune into that and to know. I mean, for me, I did what my father told me to do, which was I was good in math. We didn't have a lot of money, so he said, be an engineer. They're going to pay for your school, do all this stuff. So I did. I became an engineer. I hated it. I hated 4 years of engineering school, then 3 years of sailing on ships. I got seasick. It was horrible experience. I walked into a classroom and substituted for a day. I was exhausted when I came home, but I realized, oh, this is what I'm interested in. This is what fires off dopamine for me. So I had to go back to school and get a whole other degree and take a whole different direction. What I would like to see people do at 17 or so is to begin to get in touch with what interests them and what moves them at this point. And the big message for the kids is get a life.
What would your opinion be on parents giving their children CBD tincture to help with things like epilepsy?
I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with the CBD part at all. I really don't. And if people wanted to really do some CBD stuff, and this is just recently that came out, it's that CBDs don't release at the same temperature as THC. So you can take like a bud of marijuana and put it in some boiling water and make some tea out of it, and a lot of the CBDs will be in that tea. And to be able to drink that tea, I don't have a problem. It's the getting high part. It's the getting into that reward center of the brain that's so deep and so crucial in the direction that people go at this point. That's my issue. I'm personally glad marijuana is going to become legalized. It's about time. You know, I would just like for people like you, when you were saying with the policy and stuff, to begin to take an active role on the front end to be able to shape this stuff, because otherwise we're just going to be rolled over by the money. You know, and this guy, Tim Cermak, I think is one of the people that's really on. He works a lot with teenagers. He works a lot with marijuana. I learned a lot, and he's not anti-marijuana, but he really sees the concerns in his practice and can write about it. And so he's the one that's one of the people that's heading up the legislation on this. But I think one of the essential things on this is really separating out this teenager and an adult thing. And don't let the CBD thing be some kind of red herring on this thing. I think the CBD thing is definitely there and definitely for all this stuff, but let's really not have it be a red herring for then saying it's okay either. Yeah, and a lot of kids will say it's my medicine. But you know something? At this point, they need to figure out how to do it themselves. I had a kid that said to me, listen, I smoke a little bit of weed, a 15-year-old girl, I smoke a little bit of weed before I go to bed every night. Is that bad? You know, should I be concerned? And I was thinking about it and thinking, yeah, I'm concerned about it. If that's what you're hardwiring in your brain at 15, you ready to smoke weed every time before you go to sleep when you're 25, 30, 35? No, at 15 years old, maybe you need to teach yourself how to go to sleep. You need to figure it out. I mean, that's what we learned in ecology, was that we keep bringing these substances in from the outside to cure it. That creates its own problems. How do we figure out within the system to make it work better, rather than bring a drug in from the outside? And these drugs are all over the place, and I think that they can be life enhancements. I think they have a lot to offer, and at the same time, it is not simple. We need to figure out how to integrate drugs into our society. And for here, how do you integrate marijuana in there? And at this point, I know a lot of people here, and you're more receptive this year, I think, than last year or 2 years ago about the concern around teenagers. I think the information is sinking in here more, and I think it's sinking in for the teenagers as well. 2 years ago, no kid here would have ever thought marijuana was addictive. Now, they do. A lot of kids here, are there concerns about marijuana? Yeah. So now it's, oh, is that what it is? Oh, is that what it is? And so it's much easier to come in. Changes are being made. I personally think, though, that you guys should be on the forefront of this stuff. You guys should be the leaders in this. You're the center of this darn thing. And I think in some ways, people are kind of looking at you and saying, how are you going to deal with this stuff? And I know you're doing it as well, and the Board of Supervisors are. And it's not simple. It's not a, this is a very tricky one. I can't even use peer educators to teach other kids. I could use peer educators to teach kids about tobacco. I use peer educators to teach other kids about safe sex. But around marijuana, it's because kids themselves, nobody's really clear. The kids don't know how to give a message to other kids about this. What kids will say to other kids is, just try not to use too much. Because they don't really, it's more nuanced than some of this other stuff, which also makes it a little bit blurry here. But it's necessary. The community has seen a lot. You got a lot of experience behind you at this point. How do you shape policy around that? And I got questions like, why isn't there MA? Are there no issues around marijuana here? You know, and I'm just talking about it with teenagers. This is the third time, yeah. Each time. Tomorrow I will do 5 or 6 classes.
So what's the reception
of the children? They love it. They because they want the conversation. They are hungry for the conversation. And what they don't want is somebody to tell them no or yes, but engage them. But they want to know. They want to know, what does it mean to get high? How does marijuana work? What is going on here? So some do, some don't. You want to know something? I can't teach in every school district, believe it or not. My teaching is too dicey. They see me as being positive on marijuana. They see me, and when I teach the kid, that's why I don't teach middle school anymore, period. Because with middle school, I'd have parents that would say to me, what the hell did you tell my kid? Did you tell my kid they smoke marijuana? It's going to make them feel good? I don't want my kid to know that. You told them they smoke marijuana and it might make the apple taste better? What the heck are you telling my kid? You know. So in some ways, it's kind of like, I don't teach middle school anymore. That's not, maybe that's for somebody else to do that education. But in some ways, this stuff is not simple, and I think the kids appreciate that, to be able to stand back from it a little bit, and it gives me credibility when I give marijuana its props, and then say, and here's my concerns at this point, then they're more open to hearing it. But a lot of what I'm doing is I'm trying to talk to this part of the kid's brain. I may use the science here, but I'm trying to change how somebody is holding this thing. And the first thing I want to say is it's not all good. Can we stop back with that? The other thing I want them to walk away with, which kids don't necessarily, is marijuana in the brain. There's something going on. A lot of the kids don't even make that kind of connection. Because I think what it is in other places they're more at war with marijuana at this point. And it's threatening to say anything positive about marijuana, which is crazy to me. You know, I have a lot of respect for marijuana. But boy, to have a lot of these kids here walking around stoned every day is very sad for me. It's not going to kill them. It's not, like this giant crisis. But what it's doing, it robs them. It really narrows life down for them. And it's very hard to undo that once that stuff gets hardwired in. Like I said, there's no rehab. What do you rehab to if you never laid any groundwork in the first place? So, and that's where I would like to see that change really made, is that they take a strong stance here, and there's all these other complicated issues, you know, but I just don't want to see you guys run over by big industry with this stuff. It is necessary for the county and for legislatures to begin to do this. Otherwise, we're just going to get barreled over.
This concludes a public forum on marijuana and the adolescent brain 2015. The speaker was Berkeley educator Ralph Cantor in Laytonville in May of 2015. This event was organized by Laytonville Healthy Start. Laytonville Healthy Start Coalition's Drug-Free Communities Project is proud to support Youth Speaks Out. Our Environmental Prevention Strategies in the Community, also known as EPIC, is a project funded by the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Through our organization and coalition, we are working towards reducing youth substance abuse through a variety of strategies in the Laytonville community. If you are interested in learning more about our efforts, please contact Laytonville Healthy Start at 707-984-8089 or email JAMA at jamashields@pacific.net. Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs in streaming audio. This program is free to rebroadcast upon notification. Please visit our website and tell a friend. Thanks for listening. I'm Dan Roberts.